Hello, everyone. Welcome to Shakya Presents Movie Night. I'm your host. My name is Rudy Obias. Joining me, he is a writer, and he's a writer for ScreenRant.com, Justin Vactor. Thank you so much for joining us here on Movie Night.
Oh, thank you so much, Rudy. It's always a pleasure to talk to my favorite moviegoer and my favorite Obias in the world.
Yes, very rare thing, us Obiases. And actually, I just would like to say that I scour your weekly column like every week.
Oh, like, yes, thank you very much.
You're a geek centric, like cool geek things in pop culture thing. So yeah. I very much appreciate that.
I'm always on the lookout for something that Rudy would enjoy.
So the movie that we're going to be talking about in this episode is the new film, the third film from Rian Johnson. He started off being an independent filmmaker. First film that he came out was 2005, and it was this small film called Brick. And then a couple years later, he came out with a slightly bigger film, but very much a smaller movie called The Brothers Bloom. And this movie, Looper, it is a bigger film. It feels like Columbia, Sony, the people behind the making of this movie, gave Rian Johnson a hell of a lot more money to play with, in terms of the way the movie looks and the set pieces and what pieces are going into the movie. It seems really expensive, which is good because I like seeing indie filmmakers getting more money to make their movies. But here's a synopsis from IMDb.com. In 2072, when the mob wants to get rid of someone, the target is sent 30 years into the past, where a hired gun awaits. Someone like Joe, who one day learns the mob wants to quote-unquote close his loop, transports back Joe's future self. And the Joe in question is played by two actors, the younger Joe being played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and the older Joe, 30 years his senior, is played by Bruce Willis. So Justin Vactor, what are your thoughts on Rian Johnson overall? It seems like you like this filmmaker quite a bit. And Looper, the movie that he just came out with, do you feel that Looper is on par with his past two films, Brick and The Brothers Bloom?
Yeah, Rian Johnson is one of my current favorite filmmakers. He's up there with Christopher Nolan, Edgar Wright, and Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, wow.
And when I just hear his name, I get excited. And he's been directing a couple episodes of Breaking Bad the last two seasons. So I get excited there. And then I've been hearing about Looper, and I've been, oh, yes, anticipating, because while I wasn't a big fan of Brothers Bloom, even though I am going to rewatch it after we get done here, Brick is one of my all-time favorite movies, so he had me at Brick, and I ended up I saw that on DVD, saw Brothers Bloom in the theater, and now Looper, and this is a filmmaker that I will continue to watch. He is on my radar, as this is somebody who, whenever he puts his name on something, he puts his stamp on it. You know it's a Rian Johnson production when you see it. But just by looking at those Breaking Bad episodes, you can see that in a condensed television form, and something that he doesn't write, because he also wrote his feature films. So even when he's not the writer on something, he still is able to have his directorial stamp. And there's the few directors out there that can do that, that we love, that it's kind of like why we love those filmmakers, is because they're able to put their stamp and their signature on these films. But with Looper, like I said, I feel like it's just, he's progressing nicely. The budgets are getting bigger. It's amazing to me that Brick was shot for $475,000. This Looper was shot for $30 million, and it feels like a $70 million picture to me. But he does a lot of stuff to keep it real simple, kind of having set in the future, but there's still, it's not so far in the future that we're looking at Stallone's Judge Dredd or something Total Recall level, where, you know, everything is just super techie, and the technology is going crazy. In Looper, it feels like a throwback. It feels like an old world, and things aren't so shiny and new. So I actually loved Looper. This is my favorite movie of 2012.
Wow, that's a bold statement. I like Looper quite a bit, and I agree with you. I like the future world in this movie. Yeah. That it feels like it's our world, but there's, like, you know, little breaths of, like, futurism. There's like solar panels on cars, flying motorcycles, but the flying motorcycle doesn't work very well. You know?
And that's almost that like Star Wars, the episode 4, A New Hope, that feel of everything isn't shiny and like Phantom Menace. Everything is, it's old, it's rusted, things don't work all the time. And that's a lot of the aesthetic that people love about Star Wars is that. So I think you have that in Looper as well. And it's kind of, it serves two purposes. I think it's kind of a cost cutting technique, but also it feels like a real world. It feels like people live here.
Yeah, and those are the things that I really enjoyed with this movie. And actually, when the movie was over, I was thinking to myself, like, I couldn't believe the same guy made Brick, you know, just because Brick was on such a small scale.
Yeah.
And this is so big. And it's usually when indie filmmakers go from making smaller films to bigger films, they kind of fall on their face. You know, they kind of have some missteps because they can't control a budget of that size and a crew of that size. But it's so effortless with Looper. This movie feels like two movies. It feels like a time travel movie. Then it kind of shifts into like this Akira type movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like this,
we got a little bit of that with Chronicle earlier this year as well, that kind of Akira vibe. But I got that same sense. And there's that kind of relating to Brick. There's that noir feel to it as well. And there's actually only one thing about this movie I was iffy about, and it was Jeff Bridges playing the villain of the piece, and I didn't feel like he was menacing at all. All I could think of was Dumb and Dumber every time I saw him, and that's, you know, that's not really his fault. Yeah. I'm associating him with another character that he played, but with this movie, it just didn't feel like that intimidating mob boss that the movie wanted him to be. So I don't know if he was the best choice for that role.
I don't think there was enough of Jeff Daniels to get that kind of impression.
Well, yeah, that too.
He is a menacing type of figure. I mean, we get probably one scene where he acts erratically.
Yeah.
There's a lot in this movie. I love the world building in this movie.
I love
the energy that comes along with it. There are slight, there's one plot hole in this movie that I don't want to even mention because it feels so minor. And I love the little nod that Rian Johnson writes in the screenplay when the two versions of Joe are at the diner and the younger Joe, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is asking, like, well, how does this time travel thing work? And the older Joe's like, you know, we can spend all day talking about time travel. We can, you know, we can draw diagrams with straws, but it doesn't get to the point that, you know, we are in a situation that we have to control right now. I love that. That's a completely nod to the audience saying, don't think about it too much. Just go along with it. And I went along with it for the most part, and I thought it was really inventive use of time travel. It felt really organic. I was wondering how they were going to make the transition from the younger Joe to the older Joe, and I thought that was pretty great. That both of these two actors felt they felt like the same person, but they felt like the same person at different stages in their life, and they played it very well. I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt was really good doing his best Bruce Willis impression. What did you think of the two
actors? I thought he was phenomenal in doing the little things, not an over-the-top Bruce Willis impression, but there were these just little like facial movements that he did, like certain ways that he was like, just that is to me, you know, the epitome of a good actor. It's like it's the subtle movement. It's not the over the top exaggerated movements, but the subtle movements that it's so many little minor ones add up to, yes, I can believe that this was the same guy 30 years apart from each other.
Yeah, like he's doing the Bruce Willis smirk.
Yeah,
you know, like when I first saw him doing that, I understood, like, oh, he's being Bruce Willis. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
For me, the when the movie kind of shifts into that second part, it throws me off a little bit. I mean, I was willing to go along on the ride with it, but it feels like it's part of a different movie. It all doesn't feel so cohesive. Those are my criticisms of this movie, that it doesn't really come together as, I mean, when the movie ends, it all comes together. But when we're getting into that second part, it feels like, you know, we were at this really high pace And then we went back down, and it felt like the movie was really trying to get back to that high pace, and it really doesn't until probably like the last 15 minutes of the movie.
Mm.
Those would probably be my biggest criticisms of this movie. Other than that, I highly recommend checking out Looper. I think we are getting a lot of great sci-fi in 2012. I mean, oh, yeah. No matter how you felt about a movie like Prometheus, it's still... for my money, it's still a really great science fiction film. And we have movies like Looper coming out that,
yes,
it's a time travel film, but it doesn't, like, you know, hold your hand while watching the movie, which I really appreciate. And also, like you said, Justin, it has this noir feel to it, so it kind of did feel like Brick in a way.
Yeah.
And again, it's just really impressive to see a filmmaker like Rian Johnson work at this level, this high level of filmmaking, with big crews and big stunts and action and machine guns and comedy. There's a lot of funny moments in this movie. A big surprise for me was I didn't know Paul Dano was in this movie. So that was
I didn't either. Yeah, when I saw him on screen, I was like, oh man, yeah. So I was right there with you.
I thought that was a cool little device to tell the audience, like, the things that they're doing to the young Paul Dano are also happening to the older Paul Dano.
Oh yeah, I really liked that. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt used it later with Bruce Willis, but they were actually talking about this on. I was watching the Totally Rad Show review of it last night. The not like you were saying, not setting up the time travel, and with that, with the Paul Dano thing, not telling you the rules of the world, but just showing you the rules of the world, and you're learning by experience, going through it, and seeing, oh, okay, so that's possible. This is possible, and yeah, not sitting there and having someone read out exposition, or, you know, as much as we love Back to the Future Part 2, it wasn't Doc Brown on the chalkboard writing out, all right, now this is what happens
That's a great scene. I don't care what you say. That's still a great scene.
And Back to the Future is my favorite movie of all time. So I'm kind of predetermined or predestined to like time travel movies. And this is, I think, going to go up there with some of my all-time favorite time travel movies. Somebody was talking about this is the best time travel since 12 Monkeys. Can you even think of any other? Like, what are the? I mean, actually, Primer was a really good one, and that brings up a good point. The main guy from Primer, who was kind of intricately involved in the time travel stuff in Primer, apparently was like a special assistant on this movie, and there was apparently a whole scene that he had done that got cut from the movie, but he worked very closely with Rian Johnson on a lot of the time travel stuff. Primer, if you haven't seen it, the most realistic time travel you will ever see, like the most, I think, most scientific, well thought out time. If time travel can exist, the guys in Primer did it.
You know, I'm embarrassed to say that I haven't seen Primer.
Oh, no.
And
no.
I've heard so much great things about that movie just in terms of time travel. And, I, you know, cards on the table. Sci-fi is my favorite genre.
Oh, wow. Ever.
Like, I love – people know me as, like, loving a lot of highbrow, erudite art house films. I love those, too. But my favorite genre
romantic comedy
is sci-fi, followed by westerns, and then romantic comedy would be third. Why I love this movie, because it's hard sci-fi, but it doesn't make you feel stupid at all. Mm. You know, you go along and pay attention to what's going on. And I like that point that it shows you. It doesn't explain time travel. It shows you time travel. Those scenes where that happened to a young version, and then you can see what happens to the older versions. They did remind me of the deleted scenes from Back to the Future 2, where we see what happens to the older Biff in 2015. All of that stuff, I was like, wow, that felt like the deleted stuff from Back to the Future Part 2.
Yeah, I really thought that, like you were saying, that this is one of the smartest films I've seen this year, and it doesn't treat the audience like you're the only way. There are so many films that they want you to think that they're smart because things line up in the movie. So, okay, we said something at the beginning. Hey, we brought it back at the end. It lines up. We're really smart. And I don't think Looper is like that. I think it's Rian Johnson, for me, like I said, with these three movies, has established his credibility as a writer and as a director. So it's something that not only am I looking forward to his directing touches, but his stories have all been very well done for me. But his directorial touches, I did want to point out in this movie, his camera movements, and there were a number of different transitions that I loved. Like, there would be someone opening or someone closing a door, or I don't even know how to describe it, but like somebody opening a door and you think it's one person, and then you think it's the old Bruce Willis, and then it switches over to the young Bruce Willis. There's a point where a young child puts his hand on Bruce Willis's mouth, and it transitions into it's the younger, because the older one starts experiencing and remembering the memories that the younger one is creating in the present. And so a child puts his hand on the younger one's face, and the older one feels it, but it's like the transition, like the just the visual style of Rian Johnson, I'm in love with. So that's why one of the other reasons why he's one of my favorite directors.
Well, he's a director that really, like some of your other favorite filmmakers, like the Edgar Wright or the Christopher Nolan, really does tell stories visually more so than just exposition. And Christopher Nolan gets that knock in Inception.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that big of a problem like others feel, because a majority of that film is visual storytelling anyways. Rian Johnson does the same thing here in Looper by telling by showing you the story and showing you time travel rather than telling you. I really like the sound design in this movie. I thought, like, the use of the clock, just hearing the ticking of the clock, hearing the shotgun blast at the beginning of this movie is pretty intense, you know, because it's really loud, and just hearing that makes you on edge. And then just subduing that with this ticking clock was pretty cool. The score for this was pretty cool. This percussive, like techno, kind of sounded like Skrillex did the score for this movie.
Yeah.
And it was pretty amazing that Rian Johnson's cousin, Nathan Johnson, did the score. He did the score for Brothers Bloom and Brick as well. And
yes,
the score, all three of those scores are just so vastly different from each other, you know, where in the Brothers Bloom, it's kind of like this 1920s, you know, piano-based type of score. And this is like, Skrillex type of music.
Yeah, and there was three thoughts when I walked out of the movie. Number one, my favorite movie of the year. Number two, where can I buy the score? Where can I buy the soundtrack? And then number three, where can I buy a ticket again to go see it? Because I wanted to see it immediately again after I finished.
Okay. I think lastly, what did you think of Emily Blunt in this movie? And she doesn't come into the movie until probably 45 minutes into it. And I was wondering where she was going to fit into the movie. And I thought she fit in pretty seamlessly. She becomes the, not just the emotional part of the movie, but really the full character change for Joseph Gordon-Levitt's Joe. But what did you think of Emily Blunt in this film?
I'm right there with you. I didn't even know she was in the movie until I saw it. Because I was anticipating this movie so much, the only thing I saw was just a couple of the posters. And I did not want to know any information. I didn't know casting news. I didn't know anything. And so she was a surprise to me when, I think maybe a week before the movie, I found out she was in it. But then she is one of my favorite actresses right now. And so I was pretty excited when I saw that she was going to be in it. And I felt like you said, she fit right in, like a great puzzle piece into the mixture and completed the loop, so to speak, between them. And she's done American accents before in films, but this one I felt like she had this Southern kind of twang or drawl to her that I thought she did very well. And her performance overall was just very good.
What I like about Rian Johnson is the names of his characters, how they always rhyme. You know, like there's in this one, the little boy, his name is Sid, and it's Sid the Kid. And there's like, I think there's a line in it where he's Sid the Kid. And he always gets, like, he puts stuff like that in his movies, like in The Brothers Bloom. At the beginning, he says, hey, make way, make room. It's The Brothers Bloom. I thought, like, just putting that little tinge in the writing, I really appreciate it. And actually, upon its release, The Brothers Bloom was my number two movie of 2009.
Oh, wow.
So I will highly recommend, Justin, you check that movie out again, because I
haven't seen it since the theater. So I've been meaning to check it out on Blu-ray, but I just haven't had the time. And now that Looper's out, actually, I wanted to do a Rian Johnson marathon before Looper, but I didn't get a chance to do it. So I'm kind of doing it afterwards now. And they need to put Brick out on Blu-ray. I know it was a small film. Like I said, they shot it for $475,000 and the box office was barely $4 million. But that's one that I want to have in my collection, is Brick, which, like I said, one of my favorite films of all time.
It feels like Rian Johnson really does, he builds worlds really well. Like,
oh, yeah.
And he has his little things to them. And it's just, for me, it's just, my first thought leaving this movie was, I can't believe the same guy that made Brick made this movie. They feel so vastly different, but at the same time, they feel so familiar. Do you want to hear what my plot hole is?
Oh, yeah.
It's a small little thing. And I guess spoilers to our listeners. I'm going to spoil an element of Looper, which is actually in the trailer. So take that for whatever it's worth. So in the future, they send back Loopers to be killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the young Looper would know the loop has been closed. Like, they can cash out, spend 30 years, and then they'll get killed.
Yeah.
Because time travel is illegal, and the mob is that paranoid about how illegal it is that they kill the Loopers. So why don't they send the older Loopers to another Looper? Like, why don't they send Bruce Willis to Paul Dano, an older Paul Dano to Joseph Gordon-Levitt? That way, the loops, you know, there would be no consequences to, like, I heard him play the song, sing the song that we had when I was a child, so that's why I didn't kill him. They would just treat it like another person to kill. Like, I didn't understand, like, they could have easily, you get what I'm saying? Like, they could have easily done it that way.
That would have been a lot easier, but we also probably would not have had a movie.
That's true. And, like,
I know what you're saying. Like, that, it doesn't really make sense why, because it just seems like an added complication. It just seems like there's just more at stake. And you're just going to have people like Paul Dano's character who, when they see themselves, they're just going to, you know, freak out. So, yeah, I'm right there with you.
And there's two instances in the movie where that happens with Paul Dano and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And the thing is, like, you think, oh, they send it to them, their younger selves, so they know that their loop has been closed, so they can get signed out, you know, and then cash out and spend the next 30 years living it up. But the thing is, like, I think they would know that their loop has been closed once they get the money, which is on the back of the victim, the target. Once they see that it's not silver, that it's gold, that would be the sign to say that my loop has been closed, and not, hey, that's an older version of me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm okay with it. It's a small thing, and I attribute it to that as just bad management on the mob side, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So that's how I saw it. It was a bad management. Otherwise, I like Looper, and I highly recommend checking it out.
And I think it has a very high rewatchability factor, replay factor, because you're going to find things that you didn't see the first time. Especially there was a scene in the movie where the young – okay, so this is also in that spoiler territory, so I want to warn people ahead of time. But there's that scene with the young Sid where – he's playing with toys, and I don't know the name of the toy, but it's a character that's wearing a black hat and a black jacket. And you find out in the future, the guys that are working for for him, like the guys who round up the Loopers and send them back in time, are dressed in these black jackets and black hats, and it looks exactly like that toy. And so that was kind of a hint or a clue. There's another time where you see something happening in the present and you hear a gunshot, and then it goes over to the older Joe who we see create the gunshot. And you might miss it on the first try or your first time viewing. You might not see that. So that's one of those things, like I said, upon multiple viewings, I think people are going to get more and more involved in the story.
And I think, you know, time travel movies in general,
oh, yeah,
more and better. You know, the more you watch it, the more you're like, hey, this is how I can find more plot holes this way, eh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or I can figure it out. I can get on board with it a little bit more. And we all know that, you know, Back to the Future 3 is a much better movie than Back to the Future 2.
I am not one of those people who hates Back to the Future 3, but I will put it on the same level as Back to the Future 2. But I know a lot of people treat Back to the Future 3 like they treat the Matrix sequels or the Star Wars prequels.
No, they're much better than that.
I don't know why they do that, but they do.
Now, that's a separate conversation. And I like 3 a little bit better than 2. I like 2, but there are problems in 2 that I don't like, namely because it's not a movie. It just feels like, you know, just a bridge from 1 to 3.
Yeah, well, that's why I like to think of 2 and 3 as one giant movie, and that way you don't have that, you know, this is just the bridge to this one, and if you were watching in the theater, you had to wait 6 months for the next one. Yeah, right. I like to treat them, if they film them back-to-back, I almost like to treat them as, or like The Lord of the Rings, treat them as one big movie, but yeah. That's the way that I like to look at it. And I want to say one more thing before we close out here. I know how much you liked Prometheus, but I feel Looper is the best science fiction movie since Duncan Jones' Moon, which is one of my all-time favorite science fiction movies.
Well, I think Prometheus lines up with Moon more so than Looper. And I like the themes that Ridley Scott is going for in Prometheus.
Oh, yeah.
And the questions that he asks. And I don't think Looper has higher themes.
I mean, outside of, you know, how much
can a person change in 30 years? You know, it's the same person, but they're vastly different people. That's very interesting, and that's a good idea this film has. But I think the ideas in Prometheus are much grander than the ideas in Looper.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All good movies. People shouldn't be so, you know, critical, even though we're film bloggers and film critics. let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night. Where can we find you online, Justin Vactor?
Well, you can always find my weekly column over at screenrant.com, which is called My Geek Picks. And that is, like I said, everything that is geeky from around the internet that I like to pick and share. And it's all in a nice, convenient package for you over at screenrant.com.
And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. Shakya.com, autorcast.com, giantfreakingrobot.com, and everything that is Rudy at RudyOBias.com. On the next episode of Movie Night, not sure what we're going to be discussing. It's the beginning of October, and we have movies like Frankenweenie.
Taken 2.
We have Taken 2, but then we have, you know, VHS, which is more in line with the Halloween, you know, horror movies. But then we have Wuthering Heights, which is also a pretty fantastic film. So, well, we might talk about VHS. We might talk about Wuthering Heights. Not sure if we're going to talk about Taken 2. Yeah.
It's got a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
9%. Wow. maybe Frankenweenie. That could be something. That's the bigger movie out of all of these. So perhaps, most likely, we'll talk about Frankenweenie on the next episode of Movie Night. So closing out this episode of Movie Night, thank you for listening to our show. Goodbye.